Welcome to this Monday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We hope you had a great weekend and we are glad that you are with us. Coming up in just a bit, we'll spotlight Community Options. It's a North Dakota nonprofit built on compassion, community, and commitment. They help people of all ages overcome barriers from mental health challenges to transportation, family support, and energy assistance needs. As we begin Main Street today, we're taking a closer look at veteran homelessness in North Dakota. Reporter Michael Ochterlein of the North Dakota Monitor recently profiled the story of Army veteran Michael Houck, a former staff sergeant who served overseas and across the United States only to find himself homeless at the age of 64 after a cascade of financial setbacks, a bank account closure, and an eviction. Houck's experience reflects a troubling trend. Veteran homelessness in North Dakota is rising, and service providers say the resources that once met the need are no longer in place. In response, the state has approved a new $500,000 grant program aimed at helping veterans who fall through the gaps of federal and community support. And it's a timely piece. This week is Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week in the state. Michael, welcome to Main Street.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Craig. Really important topic.
It sure is, Michael. And you're a veteran, I'll note. Thank you so much for your service. Take us back here to your reporting. What drew you first to the story of Michael Houck?
Well, you know, we wanted to do a Veterans Day story. And, you know, there's so many things that you can write about in terms of veterans and challenges they're facing, you know, different aspects, you know, service organizations and everything. But, you know, we kind of wanted to focus on homelessness just because we were under the impression that there was an uptick in veteran homelessness. And, you know, in reaching out to some of the nonprofits and some of the homeless shelters in the area, yes, there are veterans staying at these homeless shelters overnight, sleeping on the floor, like Mr. Houck was for the last like 2.5 months. And, you know, we'll talk about where he's sleeping now, which is actually it actually kind of makes you smile that things are starting to turn around for him. But the story itself is just, it just kind of gets you.
But when you first met him, these are hard stories to cover for someone in your shoes, I think. But what stood out most about his situation and the challenges he was facing?
So I will say it is different or difficult as a veteran to cover other veterans because you're part of this community. And obviously, generalistically, we do the best we can to have a nice, even story. We don't bring any of our personal beliefs or aspects into the reporting at all. And I think that comes through in my story. But these are difficult conversations for someone to have with another person, especially when you're talking about, you know, they were housed, they were married, they had a job, and then all of a sudden they don't anymore. And they're on the street. Really, Michael said even asking for help initially was difficult. And that's something that a lot of veterans, it's the pride of being a veteran, and you don't want to admit that, you know, you are where you end up being. But I mean, Michael will tell you need to ask for help. And that's really the number one thing, because the help is there and there are programs available, and he was able to take advantage of someone. But, you know, he wouldn't have been able to do it on his own. He needed help. He needed the help of Ministry on the Margins, the Bismarck Overnight Shelter, Zero Barrier, and, you know, United Way, Missouri Slope area-wide United Way. I mean, overnight shelters, they will help you with services. But, I mean, again, they're limited because they're overnight. So it's just kind of a difficult conversation to have. And I'm very fortunate that I was able to meet Michael and share his story a little bit with the world.
Was it hard for you to tell this deeply personal story, Michael, but keep the broader context of policy?
A little bit. I mean, because I'll tell you, I ended up talking with Michael for 90 minutes. And, you know, 90 minutes is, I can't put that into less than 1,000 words, and which is what our story ended up being. And so there's so many aspects that and details that aren't in the reporting that are, you know, just really incredible. You know, I'll just start with how all this started for Michael. It started with, you know, he got behind with his bank. There was a discrepancy with how much money was in his account. He was writing checks. They ended up bouncing. Then he gets, you know, buried in these overdraft, hundreds and hundreds of dollars of overdraft fees. He's on a fixed Social Security income and he can't dig himself out. He's writing bad checks and all of a sudden he's bouncing red checks and he gets evicted. And that's just how it happened. And then once you can't dig yourself out of that bank account, the bank ended up closing his bank account. And then all of a sudden there's no place for his Social Security benefit to go into that bank account. There's no place for them to send the check because he doesn't have an apartment anymore. And then all of a sudden, what are you supposed to do? And for Michael, it was the streets.
Did you get a sense of this is too common in North Dakota and that these type of financial barriers among people are really a gateway to homelessness?
I mean, yes and no, because I think Michael will tell you that every person's homeless situation is different. I mean, maybe some people have more of a support network. They have a family member they can go stay with. They have some friends that'll let them crash on their couch and kind of pick themselves up a little bit. And, you know, but for Michael, you know, he didn't have that. It was the streets and he was out there for 2.5 months and he was going to ministry on the margins every night and sleeping on the floor and then going back out to the streets because they don't offer day services at that facility. It's a life you don't even really think about until it's kind of in front of you.
Michael, you mentioned something that I was not aware of, and I'm talking about North Dakota's very fast 3-day eviction timeline. Certainly, it must have played a role in this case.
Oh, I believe it did. In the state of North Dakota, if you fall behind on your rent or whatever, the landlord, they can give you a 3-day intent to evict notice. And if you do not remove yourself from that property within 3 days, then the eviction proceedings start. You can get a summons from the court to go before a judge and explain your case. Those hearings from the notice to the hearing can be between 3 and 15 days after you get that notice. So, I mean, we're talking within 2 weeks, you're before a judge explaining your case. And depending on the outcome of that, I mean, you work out a deadline with the court for you to become evicted from the property, but it's a very fast process. And, I don't want to say what is right and what is wrong. I mean, landlords obviously have it's their property and they have rights too. But I mean, 3 days just doesn't seem like a lot of time. And I actually quote someone from the Department of Veteran Affairs who you just can't do much within those 3 days. There's not a lot of places, signups, you know, getting callbacks, getting into programs. You just can't do a lot of that in 3 days. And then all of a sudden you're preparing to go before a judge.
Once, Michael, that Mr. Houck reached ministry on the margins, like you mentioned earlier, the staff, I believe, helped him navigate healthcare, ID issues, and housing paperwork. Yeah. What did that process look like for Michael? And what does it usually typically, I guess, look like for veterans?
Well, I think what Michael will tell you first and foremost is he referred to himself as computer illiterate. He is not very computer savvy. He's not tech savvy. He has a phone that he can operate. But really, when it comes to like working through computers and all that stuff, he wasn't able to do a lot of that. And so he needed help. And the staff at Ministry on the Margins, he was working with their behavioral health manager, Chris Morissette. She was fantastic. I mean, and she didn't actually have a lot of experience with veterans, but they have veterans that work for Ministry on the Margins. She was able to bring them in. And all of a sudden, he's getting enrolled at the VA for healthcare. He got a copy of his DD-214, which is your military separation paperwork that you need for a lot of these veterans benefits that are available. And there are actually more benefits for veterans than there are for just homelessness in general. But again, unless you have everything ready and all the paperwork and all the forms filled out. And I mean, I think Michael said in the story, he's never signed his name so many times in his life. And he thought the Army was bad, you know. And so it just it takes a lot of applying and a lot of forms and a lot of documentation to get you enrolled in these programs. And for someone who's living on the streets and it's just, it's very difficult. And so having that support network of the nonprofits in the area and these homeless shelters, I mean, so important. And he wouldn't have been able to get these services if he hadn't reached out. And I will say one of the programs that that they enrolled him in was the HUD-VASH program. That's the Housing and Urban Development VA Supportive Housing Program. And that's just for veterans. And it provides him with a housing stipend. So he was enrolled in that program, and he got onto a wait list for an apartment in the area, and he's going to be paying a reduced rent, $270 for Michael to get a little one bedroom at an apartment. Now he's on a wait list. They think he's going to be in there within a month. But I mean, there was a community organization that after he was enrolled and got on this wait list, the Community Action Partnership of North Dakota, they're a nonprofit that specializes in low to moderate income clients for obtaining self-sufficiency. They actually had funds available to get him into a hotel. So the day that I met him, you know, this is two and a half months after he's been going to ministry on the margins every day, every night. He was able to stay in a hotel, and he's got a hotel paid for up to 60 days. And he's going to be able to sleep in a bed for the next 2 months. And it's so important that we take it for granted. And, you know, I asked him what the first thing he was going to do was, and he said, I'm going to have a hot shower. And I'm sorry. I just give me a second here, Craig. I mean, just even talking about it, it kind of tugs at your heartstrings, you know?
We all take a lot of things for granted, but gosh darn it, it is wonderful that there are people who care that Michael has allowed to come into his life. I'm enjoying my conversation with Michael Ochterling. He's a reporter for the North Dakota Monitor. You can read his story about Army veteran Michael Houck, a former staff sergeant who served overseas and here in the United States, and all of a sudden found himself homeless at the age of 64 after a cascade of setbacks. Great story, great reporting. Of course, that's in the North Dakota Monitor. Michael, several people you talked to said that the system has become harder, not easier to navigate in recent years. What barriers came up most often in your reporting?
One of the biggest barriers was actually brought up by these homeless shelters in the Bismarck area. They don't have day services anymore. The United Way used to have a 24/7 service, but the, you know, funding struggles and whatnot, in March they ended up going to an overnight only model, just like Ministry on the Margins is an overnight model. So during the day, they can't be at those places, and so they're out on the streets. They're, you know, wherever they're going to go. But they, I mean, I'll share this because it's part of the story. Michael needed to use the bathroom one day, and there was nothing nearby. And so he went in the street or in a public area, and a cop cited him for that. A police officer cited him for, indecent conduct. His court date is still pending on that. But, you know, when he brought up to the police officer, he's like, well, where am I supposed to go? And if you see the picture of Michael on the front of the story, I mean, he uses a walker. He's a bigger man, and he's, you know, not extremely mobile. But the police officer said, well, you can go, you know, flat. There's a restroom that you could have used five blocks down the street. He's like, well, that's not possible for me right now. Like, and so there's no daytime place for these people to go. And you know, we're coming up on really cold days in the winter. I mean, and so Michael suggested, you know, the easiest thing would just be put out a couple porta potties, put out a warming tent. And he didn't think that was too much to ask. And you know, I don't want to, you know, bias myself by agreeing with him, but it really doesn't seem like that
much. I've seen the photo that you're talking about and just thought to myself, okay, 5 blocks when it's 80 degrees is one thing. 5 blocks when it's 10 degrees and the wind blowing 20 miles an hour and we've got a blizzard going on is something very, very different. But that's what we're coming up upon. Michael, leads to my next question. Did providers talk about capacity, especially as we're kind of rolling here into the cold season? Beds, staffing, funding, or the lack thereof that perhaps is contributing to the rise in homelessness in North Dakota?
I mean, not directly, but you can tell. I mean, the homeless shelters, they do, especially United Way, they want to be a 24/7 service. But the funding shortages were not allowing them to. And there was some extra money that was put in the Department of Veteran Affairs budget this year, $500,000 for a grant program that is still to be released. But I'm sure a lot of those nonprofits are going to apply for those funds because really every little bit helps. But there's always more that can be done because there are people sleeping at these overnight shelters every night in Bismarck. And I'm sure it's the same in Fargo and every other city around the state. Talking with some of the administrative staff at Ministry on the Margins, they're talking like, you know, up to 60 people a night. And they're sleeping on the floor of these places just to get out of the cold overnight.
The numbers are staggering, and you referenced them. 3,800 people experience homelessness in North Dakota, 229 veterans. What do we know about what's driving that increase, Michael?
You know, there's not much. There's more reporting that needs to be done on what is actually driving this, because like I was saying, each situation is unique and everybody has their own unique circumstances that all of a sudden they end up homeless and living on the streets. But I would encourage everybody to go to the North Dakota Homeless Management Information System. It's the data set that I came across that tracks homelessness in North Dakota. Really, really good data set to use. It's sortable. You can adjust any time period people experience a homelessness. It lists, the services that they're getting. But also, I've been told by some of these shelter staff that the amount of veterans, it could be an undercount, because there are some people that would not want to admit that they are a veteran when they're discovered to be homeless. So, I mean, it's an imperfect, it's imperfect data, but it's still important. And just because it's conservative doesn't mean it's not worth anything. So I think the fact that in 2024, 3,800 people were experiencing homelessness in the state is something. And, 229 veterans, that's 229 people that serve the country that they ended up in a spot they did not expect.
I know that there are 357 incorporated cities in North Dakota, and I have to believe a large majority of those are under 3,800 people. So think about that everyone in a town and more are homeless in our state.
Yeah, it's there's a lot more to be done. And I'll bring up, Governor Kelly Armstrong. I mean, he proclaimed this Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week in the state of North Dakota. And he's starting an interagency council on homelessness. And it's got a lot of the commissioners at the state level. We're talking Indian Affairs Commissioner Brad Hawk, Department of Corrections Rehabilitation Director Colby Braun, Commerce Commissioner Chris Shulkin, HHS Interim Commissioner Pat Trainer, a bunch of the nonprofits are involved in this, and they're going to be providing annual reports on homelessness because the governor recognizes that this is a problem, and he wants to address it in some form.
Michael, what can you tell us about the additional $500,000 for veteran homeless services that was approved recently, this grant program that now exists to help?
Well, to tell you the truth, not very much, because when I was interviewing the commissioner, he was actually in the middle of writing it. So it's not available right now. It will be available soon, and it's going to be available to those community and statewide nonprofits to apply for, to get a little bit of extra funding, to provide a little bit of something extra. And, $500,000 may not sound like much, but I mean, those nonprofits will absolutely take it and they will put it to work and it will get used. And, but I think the details are still remain to be seen on that. But it's in the pipeline. And so there are some things that are happening, but there can always be more. And I think Michael Houck and all the nonprofits and all the shelters, they will tell you there's always something more you can do.
After visiting with the folks in the nonprofits who are trying to help, and Mr. Houck and others, have you seen any policy solutions or assistance ideas that are kind of raising to the top, Michael, that are going to be discussed here in the future?
A little bit. I mean, there's talk of a daytime kind of triage center in the Bismarck area. There's actually a community kind of focused panel in Bismarck on the 18th. At the city at the city county building on from 5:30 on the 18th. They're going to be discussing homelessness. They're going to be bringing some of these nonprofit people to have a panel discussion. They're going to be getting public input. I mean, it sounds like there's wheels in motion to kind of help address this, but, you know, nothing concrete. And, you know, laws are one thing, but the legislature is not going to meet until 2027. So, I mean, it's really tough to do this through legislation when you have a biennial legislature like North Dakota does. So a lot of this is just with people on the ground. It's with these nonprofit groups. And they'll be the first to tell you, they always want volunteers. They want people to show up. They want people to help out. They want, you know, they will take whatever help you can give them. But I don't know if there's anything specific that is happening right now besides like kind of those listening sessions, this new commission and possibly in early talks of maybe a 20 or a daytime center in Bismarck.
I'll just add to that briefly. You talked about volunteers, Michael, and it's a scary thing for people to volunteer to help folks like Mr. Houck. But I'll say this, that the nonprofits and the organizations that I've experienced will train you. They'll support you. They'll give you the tools that will allow you to help. And I think that's often not thought about when people are thinking, well, I can't do that because there are a lot of things I don't know and that I don't understand. So it's a good time, especially this time of year, right? We have a lot to be thankful for, but it's also a good time to recognize that there are many of us here in North Dakota that maybe can help from our assistance. Michael, as we kind of wrap things up, what do you hope your readers took away from your story?
Well, I think one thing I want them to take away is that this can happen to anyone. It can happen to veterans. It can happen to families. It can happen to your neighbor.
Right here.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't, you know, people living in distant lands. These are your neighbors in North Dakota that are, through unfortunate circumstances, they lose control of their situation and their environment. And then, you know, when you're put in that situation, I mean, homelessness, and you're trying to make things work, I mean, you're really open to anything, but still asking for help and admitting that you need help, that's probably the most important thing. And a lot of these nonprofits and the State Department of Veteran Affairs, I mean, they want you to reach out. When I was talking to the commissioner, Mr. Wongen, he said, you know, we have the Crisis and Suicide Helpline. It's 988. You can call that number for anything. 988, housing assistance, you know, emotional, mental health services. I mean, they will put you, they will point you in the right direction and connect you with resources. The state helpline is managed by First Link. They also do the information 211. So, I mean, they have the resources. They know where to send you. You just need to call and reach out. And there are people that are willing to help you. For sure.
And you'll get someone right away when you make that call, which I think is so critical. Our thanks to North Dakota Monitor reporter Michael Ochterling for joining us today for his in-depth reporting on veteran homelessness in North Dakota, his full story on Michael Houck's experience and the state's efforts to support veterans and community's efforts to support veterans is available now for you to read at the North Dakota Monitor. Michael, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it, Craig. Thank you so much for highlighting the issue.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Nodak Insurance Company, serving North Dakota for over 75 years, providing insurance products from auto, home, farm, and business. Details at nodakins.com.
Still ahead on Main Street today, we spotlight Community Options. It's a North Dakota nonprofit helping people of all ages overcome barriers from mental health needs to transportation and family support. That's ahead here on Main Street. Stay with us. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and today we're honored to shine a light on an organization that quietly makes a huge difference across North Dakota, Community Options. With the motto of compassion, community, and commitment, this nonprofit puts people, their hopes, their dreams, and their dignity at the center of everything that they do. With us today is Jocelyn Bauer. She's a marketing and outreach coordinator. Jocelyn, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you.
And Bailey Lewis. She's the director of community-based services for Community Options. Bailey, welcome to Main Street.
Hi, thank you for having us.
To begin with, I guess, give us background of what each of you do for Community Options. And Bailey, you can go first, then we'll visit with Jocelyn.
So we have various different programs here for community-based. So for individuals who are facing certain barriers, instead, we come up with have these programs that are all client-focused and client-based and very client-driven. So what that looks like is a client can come in and they can use a referral code or go to our website, communityoptionsnd.com, and fill out a referral and be connected to what services they qualify and what barriers they are facing and needing more support and resources within that. So one of our many, many programs is first and foremost, we have LIHEAP. And so, Jocelyn, if you want to talk a little bit about more LIHEAP, as she really...
So my title is Marketing and Outreach Coordinator. So that comes with a lot of different things. One of my main purposes is to make sure that everyone in our community understands the LIHEAP program. And if they would like help or assistance or questions with that, I'm here to do that. If they need help finding, you know, that documentation, to prove those income or expenses. A lot of times the people that we're helping are, you know, our seniors, people that carry a disability. And so I'm able to go to their homes, help them, you know, gather those documents, get all that submitted. And even after this submitting the application, stick with them through the process to make sure that from start to finish, they have someone by their side. So I think that's something that stands out a little bit with Community Options. And we are also contracted with the state to follow through with these LIHEAP applications.
When you talk about community services that you provide, is it 24/7? Is it things like programming? Is it things like enjoy oneself at a movie theater or to try to find meaningful employment? Is it all of those things?
Great question, Craig. So the community-based, we come up with goals that the client wants to work towards. So if that is in regards to getting connected to more services, making sure that they're attending their appointments, we do not provide psychiatry or counseling services here. However, we know the importance of all different aspects. If it's going to their medical appointments, if it's going to get their, to the dentist, if they're having barriers with transportation, connecting them with those kind of resources, if it's barriers with transportation, what that looks like, really, Community Options is founded on having a barrier present and having a program that supports that barrier and what that looks like. And also to keeping it cohesive within Community Options. If you're, you know, needing a support in this area, but oh, you can also really benefit from this program. We really like to keep the client at utmost resourceful way.
I know that there are families and even caregivers who are listening to our program. How do they learn about you? And once they've learned about you, what do you want them to do?
Hopefully they meet me, because that's my job, is to make sure that our community in Region 5 here, because we're able to, luckily Community Options is glorious and has marketing and outreach coordinators across the state. So in my area here, that's my job. I'm supposed to go out there and make sure that, you know, our neighbors and our families are educated on these programs, understand how they can dive into these programs, or if they just want to have a conversation about it. Because a big thing with ours is that there's not this big commitment or signed contract. You want to call and have a conversation about these programs, please do. If you, you know, just want to see, because it's in our name, right? Community Options. We want our community to know every single option that's out there, regardless if it's ours that best suits them or somewhere else. We're going to make sure that they're aware of it.
What are the age guidelines, I guess, of folks that you serve? I'm wondering whether you serve young people or if they are X amount of years old or older.
That's what's really awesome about some programs too. So speaking specifically on our Family First program, Family Services, those are for children aged 2 to 17. So if you're a parent with a child aged 2 to 17, you're able to look into that program and see if that's something that's suitable for you. And then also, if we're talking about targeted case management, we have the child side, so that's 21 years and younger. So that's a little broader than maybe some other programs. And then also we have the adult side, which is 18 years and older. So we really try to be there for a person wherever they're at in their life. There's a lot of stages there, so we really try to show up everywhere.
I've experienced as being a business owner, we also had the opportunity to employ folks with disabilities. So at the time, we visited with our community services provider and made those connections. What advice would you give to someone like me who wants to maybe reach out, but has never done something like this before and is wondering, gosh, I would like to do it, but I don't know how it would impact my business?
Absolutely. So all of our services and our programs here are completely confidential. And like Jocelyn said, even just calling or looking at our website provides so much more information, and to know that you're not alone, that all of these different programs that we have in the state of North Dakota, not just here in Fargo, North Dakota, but like Jocelyn said, regionally, that there is a program, you know, out there. And if we, you know, just get the opportunity to hear your voice or, you know, send an email or, you know, say hello to our awesome, you know, marketing coordinator here, Jocelyn, you know, just start that conversation going is huge, because community mental health is just as important, I feel, as physical health, and both are going hand in hand. So starting that conversation to reach out when you need to, and to understand that mental health is just as important as your physical health, no matter what age that is. I feel that every single generation learns something from the previous generation and continuously on moving forward, just like the circle of life, the Lion King song, if you know what that song. So what that looks like is that if we don't start the conversation now about mental health and what everyone is not made to fit into a certain box, and that's the beauty of life, right? Is that you are going to encounter every single human being, no matter where you are. If that's simply walking on the street, down the sidewalk, and you say hello, or if that's somebody that you work with in a professional setting, or if that's simply the male woman or male man, no matter what that looks like, ability or disability, everyone has joy and compassion in them. And finding what that joy and compassion is, it might look completely different to the person that you're sitting next to. They might communicate with you differently. They might have different interests than you. And that's the beauty of life, you know, that everybody does not have to fit in a certain shoebox, that you can start that conversation and say, hey, I hear you. And simply saying, I hear you. You don't have to disagree. You don't have to agree. But hearing somebody, no matter what that looks like, if that's communication or if that's simply just smiling, because communication may be a barrier, that's starting out opening so many doors to the importance of mental health and the importance of abilities and disabilities, and the importance of judgment, and the importance of no matter what that looks like, you don't have to agree, but the big saying is you can always agree to disagree. And that's very important to teach individuals that may have that viewpoint of the understanding that unless it happens to you or you know somebody, you don't understand. And that's okay, you don't understand, but bouncing back to, I hear you. I hear you. And I may not understand, but I hear you. And that's the beauty.
It's kind of amazing how much community members are coming together to show allyship against groups that have been targeted or been, we've just automatically expected less. So we've offered less. And so I think just, I would challenge those organizations, those companies that have received those letters to educate, do their part to then, you know, cause that being an ally means more than just, you know, being like, hey, I care, you know, you gotta be loud too. So, you know, that person that wrote that, I don't want to be here around these people, I would challenge them with questions, educate them a little bit. Cause I know if me personally, the most, and I just spoke about this with my superiors too, is I'm most offensive when I feel incompetent. And so if they feel they are uneducated on something, especially another person, the best thing to do is to educate them. And like Bailey said as well, there's understanding is so great, but it doesn't validate anybody's experience. That person is valid 100%. And your understanding is just to help you move along better in your life around the other humans that you're interacting with, and not to put it on other people.
I'm enjoying my conversation with Jocelyn Bauer. She's a marketing and outreach coordinator for Community Options, and Bailey Lewis, the director of community-based services from Community Options. We're here to talk about how the agency is building opportunity and choices across North Dakota. Do you guys use volunteers?
That's a great question. So we do not have volunteers. However, at this time, we definitely are community-based. So if that is going out and spreading awareness in regards to what services that we provide and being educated on what is out there. So at this time, we do not have volunteers. However, we work with all ages and stages.
What are your biggest challenges?
Having more answers for our clients. Having understanding that, unfortunately, we can't give them the answers because we don't know. And if, just like Jocelyn was saying, if we don't know an answer, we are honest and authentic in saying, I hear you. I hear you that you have that question. I hear that you have that concern. We hear you. We at Community Options, we hear you. And we're here to understand what you're going through and hearing you out and connecting you on whatever that may look like, but also understanding that it's okay to have your feelings. It's okay to have questions and have ongoing questions, because if we don't ask questions, we don't get any answers. And I think that is so important, that if something is going on and you don't have the answer, ask questions, because someone maybe eventually will have that answer. And if we have the answer right now, we will find that answer for you. And it's just, honestly, it's just waiting on to see what that will look like moving forward to support our clients. The best that Community Options, the mission of our Community Options way. And again, having the client right in the middle and focus, because these services are for them, and we are just here to support them and guide them into whatever role and whatever way of life that looks like.
Jocelyn, what about you? What are your biggest
challenges? Honestly, today, the one thing I would like to take off my plate is making sure that everybody in our community actually has something on their plate. SNAP benefits, that's been a huge thing. It's been a huge weight on the community shoulders. Just to be entirely frank, that would exactly be what I would take off my plate, is to make sure that we all have full plates. Mm-hmm.
I should have done this more clearly earlier, I think, but if you were to define to me who you would like to serve.
So, because it is completely different from side to side, not completely, but very different from side to side. So it really, it's going to depend on our programs. So if we're talking about targeted case management, that's going to look like, you know, children, adults that have been facing some serious mental illness or emotional disturbances. That's who we're here for with that program. If we're talking about family services, we're here for those families that didn't really have those role models to see what kind of practices and behaviors. And we're here to offer that, you know, kind of preventative measure. It's a very low intensive program, family services, where we just... We kind of celebrate those small wins, because it takes a lot of small wins to be a parent and to work through everyday struggles that families have. And then if we're talking about, you know, ND Works program, that's a specific program for people. If you are directly, if your case is open with SNAP, you can qualify for this ND Works program. That can allow you to get reimbursements for transportation, clothing, training classes. So our population is everyone. And if we have a population that we're not serving, we have people that I've seen or, you know, reading about our history that actively go and look up different programs to make sure that whatever population we're not getting, we have something for them. So right now, maybe it's not everybody, but please let us know if there's something that's needed. I think, like, yeah, starting the conversation so that we know, like, all right, maybe we need to pick it up here. But yeah, we're really looking at everybody. Sure. If it's whether somebody that's been had addiction or been incarcerated, somebody that's had, you know, on the other side, if we're talking developmental disabilities, we're here for people.
But are there fees?
That's a great question. So every single one of our programs has eligibility requirements. And so what that looks like is there's certain insurances that go through. And again, that's all great billing questions. We have an amazing billing department here for community options. And, you know, we have also the resources of within that program. So if there is something that you are needing, as long as it's meeting those guidelines and regulations with state funding and through your insurance, that we do follow that. And that's extremely important, because I think there's a lot of things that are not being utilized that us as providers in whatever field that is, if it's case management, if it's LIHEAP, if it's any of those resources, that we can provide the knowledge of what individuals qualify for with their insurance. Because, you know, a lot of people don't know that, myself included. You grow up and you're like, oh, insurance, okay. Well, what does that look like? What services do you get? What services are 100% covered? What services are not fully covered? What
was that? You can't learn if you don't ask type of question.
Exactly. It's because it's so important. And we follow all of the things going on in the world. But then also, just like Jocelyn said, if they're is a specific program that we don't have, our amazing founders, they look on how we can work with the state and we can provide more of those programs. For example, our family services program, we are the first in North Dakota to have this service. So if you are wanting to get more, if you are a family, if you are a guardian, a grandpa or a grandma or any family dynamic, because everyone comes from a family, if that's biologically, if that's adoption, if that's fostering, if that's whatever that looks like for your family and what you define as a family, that matters and that's important. And we are the first in North Dakota here at Community Options to have that amazing service. And so having that, what that looks like for families is, you know, meeting them where they're at and not being judgmental and saying, what does your family look like? What barriers are you facing within your family? Because once you open up that door, then it's going to be non-judgmental. It's not coming in there and saying, hey, you have to do this, you have to do this. It's opening the door and saying, what does your day look like? What does bedtime look like?
What do you want it to
look like? What do you want it to look like? Exactly. Having all of those open-ended questions and seeing how we can provide more support, because it's all very evidence-based and it's very much, you know, we have an amazing team here, an admin team that really saw a need for this service specifically and grew and wanted to learn more and went to all the classes and the trainings and got completely 100% trained so that we could be the first in North Dakota to have that service. And I think that speaks volumes for Community Options, not just for our family service program, but all of our programs. Be kind. I think that is the biggest thing, that if I could scream it from the rooftops or the mountaintops, is be kind. You may look differently or handle situations differently or have a different form of communication or not have the nicest clothes or have, you know, no form of transportation, but hey, you're motivated to get to somewhere or go to a job or to anything. Just be kind. You know, everyone has a story and everyone has a background and what they're facing, and we see you and we're here for you.
Our thanks to Jocelyn Bauer and Bailey Lewis from Community Options for sharing how the organization is building opportunity and choice across North Dakota. You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public.
Fargo Moorhead Opera presents Amal and the Night Visitors, the story of a boy, his mother, and three kings. Performances are November 21st and 22nd at 6:30 p.m. and November 23rd at 2 p.m. at the Yumcom Center. Details at fmopera.org.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, catch up on the news and stories from around the world, the nation, and here at home on All Things Considered. That's up next on Prairie Public. And if you're listening to us during the evening broadcast, keep it here for Hidden Brain. That follows Main Street on Prairie Public.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Books on Broadway and Dakota Soda and Coffee Company of Williston, featuring coffees and a wide variety of books for children and adults. Books on Broadway, the independent bookstore for independent minds.
This is Dakota Datebook for November 17th. North Dakota tops all other states in the production of several crops, including oats, flaxseed, canola, and peas, and ranks second in sunflowers and wheat. The state usually places between 15th and 20th in national corn production. While corn isn't one of North Dakota's top crops, it's still significant. Its annual production is valued at about $2 billion. Some far-sighted North Dakotans realized early on that while corn might never be the state's leading crop, it would always matter. The first statewide corn show was organized in 1923. It was designed to provide educational sessions and to advertise North Dakota as a corn state outside her own boundaries. The first show was a huge success, and the second was even bigger. Based on that momentum, organizers made plans to form a board of directors, including experienced corn growers and staff from the Agricultural College. In January of 1925, it was announced that the corn show would become a permanent institution in Bismarck. On this date in 1925, Secretary of State Robert Byrne opened the third annual corn show in Bismarck. H.P. Goddard, Secretary of the Association of Commerce, predicted it would be the biggest show of its kind ever held in North Dakota. It featured more exhibits than the previous 2 years, along with entertainment, a band concert, magician, and acrobats. The president of the Northern Pacific Railroad was scheduled to speak, and Attorney General George Schaefer addressed the crowd on the significance of the state corn show. The highlight of opening day was an original play, The Land of Royal Corn, featuring a cast of 125 local people, directed by Professor A.G. Arvold of the Agricultural College. The corn show was a major event for Bismarck. The city was decorated with flags and banners. Merchants built special window displays. The Lions and Rotary Clubs hosted luncheons, and businesses ran ads welcoming visitors to the annual corn show. Social clubs even canceled meetings so members could attend. Planning for the 1926 corn show began immediately, even as the 1925 show wrapped up with a lively street fair and dance. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting art programming here on Prairie Public.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Health Partners, offering a simplified approach to health plans, customer service, and community partnerships in North Dakota. Learn more at healthpartners.com/Dakota Plans.
It's Layla Faldin. Look, I won't say that listening to Morning Edition makes you cool. I mean, I think that, but you might learn something that does.
One of the latest fitness fads involves wearing a weighted vest as you walk around.
Ed Sheeran has a new album that's bursting with international flavor.
The American Association of Orthodontists declared that braces have never been cooler.
Stay in the know with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, weekdays from 4 to 9 a.m. Central on Prairie Public.
And that's it for this Monday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. Tomorrow on the show, as National Rural Health Day approaches, we'll take a deeper dive into the shift from traditional fee-for-service medicine to value-based care. It's an approach that rewards prevention, early detection, and long-term health. Dr. Kathy Cantor, the Chief Population Health Officer at Essentia Health, will join us to explain how mobile mammography, Community paramedics, digital outreach, and new care coordination tools are reshaping healthcare across North Dakota and the country. She'll also discuss what the transition means for older patients, the future of Medicare, and why trust and local connection remain at the heart of better health outcomes. That's tomorrow on Main Street, and we look forward to your joining us again.